Hi, folks. It's Drew Badger. And yes, we just wanted to touch base with you before the show. We are aware, and as you probably are now, Trans World has officially been postponed. We do not have a rescheduling date yet. We do have calls in to the Trans World staff and the Haunted Attraction Association staff, and we're looking at trying to get them on maybe a special edition show sometime in the next few days to talk about this very fast developing story. So anyway, folks, some of the information on the current show was recorded prior to the news of Trans World. So just be aware of that. We hope you enjoy the show, and let's get started.
For the deepest, darkest crypts, to the backwoods swamp where we hit the bottom, from the inside of your casket to the fears lying deep inside your subconscious, it's time for a big, scary show.
Greetings, mortals. I'm Dick Terhune, the voice from hell. And of course, you're listening to the Big Scary Show!
Hi, this is Butch Patrick. That's right, Eddie Munster from the Munsters, and you're listening to the Big Scary Show.
Hello, creeps. It's me,
John Kassir, the voice of
the Crypt Keeper. And you're listening to the Big Scary Show, the top podcast in the industry.
Hi, this is Amanda Burse from Fright Night and Married with Children, and you're listening to the Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Camden Toy from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel, and you're listening to the Big Scary Show.
My name is Danny Trejo, and most of you know me from a lot of movies. And you're listening to the Big Scary Show. Keep listening, or I'll come looking for you.
You're listening to the Big Scary Show with three big scary men and one that wears more makeup than I do.
Hey. Hey. It's me, Princess Trainwreck. Yeah, I know. I haven't been around in a while. I'm sorry. Look, Badger's a little broken up right now, because we all know about Trans World, and he had to cancel his trip for now. I'm sure he'll go to whenever it's been rescheduled. We'll find out. But anyway, he's asked me to fill in for him, so here I am. What do you do? So anyway, this is the episode 206. And it's, as always, a great show. We hope you enjoy it. Badger's gonna read the news for you so you can keep up with all what's going on. There's a lot. Storm's gonna be ranting in a haunt minute, as he always does. Wonder what he could be talking about. Meat Hook Jim will be doing another Between the Corpses. I hope you enjoy that one. Gladys seems to like that one, too. And that dreamboat Jerry Vane, the hauntstrumentalist. Oh my god, Gladys has spells whenever she hears his voice. He's gonna be spinning some great haunt tunes for us to kind of let you ease your way through this difficult time. The Round Table of Terror, well, we're talking to the legendary voice from hell, Dick Terhune. Oh my god, I love his voice work. Anyway, Dick's going to be talking about getting customers to your haunts this year in the most entertaining fashion that is Dick Terhune. You will love it. We all do. Of course, Vista's back with his Vista. He's going to be doing a retrospective on Ozzy Osbourne, the original Bat Eater himself. We have a gruesome giveaway for the month of March, so we hope you're listening carefully and we hope you'll enter the contest. And of course, so much more out there. So anyway, enjoy the show. This is the Big Scary Show episode 206. Ugh, they don't pay me enough for this.
Enter the haunted world of Frightfine and discover an environment dedicated to promoting your haunt. Target customers will influence others on attending haunt attractions as Frightfine brings in scream seekers looking for haunted places, events, and accommodations of every sort. Various exposure options give you the ability to reach your audience throughout the year. Don't be afraid. Go to FrightFind.com now to add your haunt for free and see for yourself the difference Frightfind will make in your haunt listing.
Welcome back to Insanity Hall. Demented Ardogo on the Big Scary Show.
Welcome back to Insanity Hall. Once you're in there, the gates are closed. You can't struggle, you can't fight. Once you're in there, there's no getting out. Staring at the blue lights and rusty iron bars. I'm throwing matches where the mind is in the stars. Dr. Gift Station. Why you an insane? It's only you know. Climbing up the walls, crawling at the doors. There's no way out, there's no way out, there's no way out, but the dark is coming out. Mind is a fraction in this crowded cell again. Picking up the pieces, why you an insane? Street jacket holds you so tight.
A baby is born in America, and every few minutes somebody dies. That's the cycle of life. The important thing is that the dead are supposed to stay dead, but somewhere, somehow, something has gone wrong. Scientists have been experimenting with a sonar device to make our food supply grow, but they've unleashed a terror beyond description. They've awakened the dead. Run home, lock your doors, bolt your attics, and seal off your basements. And whatever you do, don't open the window. They tampered with nature, and now we must pay the price. For those of you with a taste for zombies and the living dead, comes a nightmare tale that won't go away. Don't open the window. A special weekend late show from Filmways, rated R.
Ohio Haunted House owners, actors, and enthusiasts, join the new Ohio Haunters Association. We are working with haunters across the state, from home to pro, to strengthen the Ohio haunt community. Open to all owners, actors, makeup artists, prop builders, designers, and Halloween paranormal enthusiasts. The Ohio Haunters Association, where haunting is the heart of it all. Look for us on Facebook.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time for Deadline News here on The Big Scary Show with your host, me, Drew Badger, bringing you all the latest in the haunted house, Halloween, and horror industries. Hello everyone, this is Drew Badger and this is Deadline News for episode 206. And we're going to start off with some news from the historic Wilkesboro Krampus Fun Run in Wilkesboro, North Carolina. A fun run like you've never imagined. Join us at the Carolina West Wireless Commons in Wilkesboro on Saturday, March 21st, beginning at 8:30 a.m. The run begins at 9 a.m. at the Greenway Trailhead behind the Wilkes Heritage Museum and finishes at its event partner, Anchor Coffee. But watch out! Along the mile-long journey, the Krampus and his team of assorted ghouls will be waiting. Can you make it through the Krampus Gauntlet? Participants will receive t-shirts, state your size at pre-registration, and winners will get a special event prize. It's $20 for adults and $15 for ages 16 and under. There will be food and vendors at the end if you make it. This event is part of the 5th Annual Historic Wilkesboro Halloween Parade and Festival, benefiting the Child Abuse Prevention Team and Our House. Get more information at facebook.com/WilkesHalloweenParade. We have this news from the Friday the 13th franchise via BloodyDisgusting.com. No new movies under the Friday the 13th umbrella can be made until the current legal situation is cleared up and worked out, but that doesn't mean Paramount isn't celebrating the 40th anniversary of their slasher classic this year. How are they celebrating, you ask? For starters, Paramount is releasing the original film on 40th anniversary limited edition Steelbook Blu-ray and digital, with Amazon currently listing a May 5th release date. Housed inside the Steelbook packaging, which includes Friday the 13th's classic poster art on front, will be the previous released Blu-ray disc of the uncut version. Quote, with the addition of unrated footage and insightful special features, plunge deeper into the film that spawned 11 sequels and the genre's unstoppable bad guy, Jason Voorhees. A new owner and several young counselors gather to reopen Camp Crystal Lake, where a young boy drowned and several vicious murders occurred years earlier. They've ignored locals' warnings that the place has a death curse, and one by one they find out how unlucky Friday the 13th can be as they are stalked by a violent killer. Unquote. Sean Cunningham's Friday the 13th was originally released on May 9th, 1980. We have this from the Asylum 49 Haunted Hospital in Tooele, Utah, announcing Ghost Hunting 101. Happening May 6th, 13th, 20th, 27th, and June 3rd, 10th, and 13th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Tooele Valley Wellness and Community Center, 140 East 200th Street South in Tooele, Utah. Included in the cost is 16 hours of class and lab instruction, course manual, certificate of completion, and a class photo. Special guest investigator Cammie Anderson, author of The Haunting of Asylum 49, will also be there, and each participant will receive an autographed copy of the book. Limited spots available. Message them to reserve their spot now. The last class will be a 4-hour final ghost hunt. Get more information and message them at facebook.com/official.asylum49. That's the number 49. We have this update from Days of the Dead in Las Vegas. It is with great pleasure that we announce the addition of 7-time Academy Award-winning makeup artist Rick Baker to the lineup of Days of the Dead Las Vegas, happening March 20th through the 22nd at the Plaza Hotel and Casino. Rick Baker, Hollywood makeup icon and 7-time Academy Award winner, will appear at Days of the Dead Saturday, March 21st for a limited signing of his new deluxe illustrated 2-volume book, Rick Baker, Metamorphosis, plus an exciting Q&A panel discussion. Books will be available for purchase at the show, and the hour-long panel will highlight how classic horror inspired a young Baker to pursue his dreams and how fear father of fandom, Forrest J. Ackerman, and his famous Monsters of Filmland magazine influenced Rick and other industry household names. At the panel, the audience will be invited to ask Rick questions about his book, career, and work on movies from The Exorcist to American Werewolf in London, Videodrome to Gorillas in the Mist, Ed Wood to Men in Black, and so much more. For more information and those tickets, please go visit daysofthedead.com. We have this news from the Containment Haunted House in Lithia Springs, Georgia. It's months after Halloween, and pumpkin carcasses litter the woods, and the flies begin to swarm. The days are getting warmer, and the nights are getting shorter. The spirits are becoming restless before they return to the underworld for a long summer slumber. Desperation and exhaustion bring a new danger to those foolish enough to enter. Containment Haunted House presents The Rot. Happening April 3rd, 4th, 10th, and 11th. Get more information at containmenthauntedhouse.com. And finally, we have this news from the Red Vein Army Escape Rooms in Ashland, Virginia. Red Vein Escape has a brand new 60-minute escape game adventure called Escape from 20,000 Leagues. We're booking for April and beyond, starting right now. But look for special select dates in March when the game will be available. Red Vein Escape is our year-round multi-escape game sister business located in downtown Ashland. We even have haunt merch for sale in our lobby and an event space that's perfect for birthday parties, corporate events, or if you just want to check out our collection of art. Booking for Escape from 20,000 Leagues can be made at redveinescape.com. Remember, folks, if you have news in the haunted house, Halloween, or horror industries, and you want it on the show, email it to us, news@bigscaryshow.com, and we'll get it on the show. No news is too big or too small. This concludes this edition of the Big Scary Show's Deadline News.
Broadcasting to you from the darkest reaches of the earth, this is a Haunt Minute. And now, with this week's commentary, Storm.
Alright, so while we're all doing our best right now, you know, trying to limit the impacts of the COVID-19 virus to, you know, staying healthy, best practices, trying to keep as much as we can of it, of just being as much of an inconvenience to ourselves, society, and, you know, the industries we work in, both haunting and, you know, your day jobs and everything. You know, we gotta look back at everything and look at it as a haunter and say to ourselves, every zombie movie's right. That's right, every zombie movie has apparently gotten some aspect of human behavior during something like this correct. Which is hilarious because it's always those aspects of a zombie movie where you sit there and go, no, don't do that, that's not the right thing to do. But someone goes and does it anyway. And we're seeing examples of it, and you know, luckily it could be worse and bigger examples, but there are some out there. One of the most glaring is, you know, you always got the person in the zombie movie who does exactly the opposite of what they do because they want to do something. So, you know, you have one COVID-19 patient in New Hampshire who was under self-quarantine, but apparently they decided, oh yeah, that doesn't apply to the, you know, party I want to go to that is invited to. You know, I want to go to that, so no, quarantine doesn't apply to that, and we'll go out. Yeah, that's almost right out of a zombie movie. You know, it's just a scratch, don't worry about it. I'm not really, you know, that sick, and it's nothing, and, you know, it ends up spreading, and that's what it is. A zombie thing is the spreading. Now, again, it's entirely different, and you know, the impact, and, you know, it's extreme with it, but you just see this human behavior, the running out and buying all the toilet paper. You know, ooh, Australia looks like they have a shortage. Well, anything, when you're buying something that's half the size of you at a store, you know, your toilet paper math and your giant cases of toilet paper, when people decide to buy a lot of those, you have their empty shelves, and then everybody has the fear of being left out, psychological, and they go do it. It's exactly the type of, you know, person in a zombie movie where I have a group. All right, we're going to do this, and we're not going to do this. You know, you see the thing out in the field, don't run and get it, because the zombies are going to chase you. All right, don't do it. And then, you know, somebody in the group has a fear of being left out, and they go run to whatever it is in the field, and the zombies end up chasing everybody, and the plan goes to hell. You know, that's what we got with empty shelves of toilet paper at the moment. There's plenty of toilet paper. It's on a truck. It'll get there, you know. Use what you have at home, because no one's completely out. No one has ever been completely out of toilet paper in this country in 50 years. Anyway, the great things, the cruise ships and stuff. All right, let's try and contain it. Well, you got a big mass of humanity on a single object. You know, the virus is going to spread. And then you have all these countries that, oh yeah, no, land here, we got a plan, we got to figure it out. It's like, no, ain't our problem. No, you orphan cruise ship, just keep going from port to port, and we'll figure it out wherever someplace can get to you. So to the fact that, you know, you go ahead, find some other country to go, you know, land in. You might have a couple people sick on there, we just won't want to deal with it at all. And as a matter of fact, you know, not only are we not going to deal with it, the only aspect of the government or anybody who we're going to put in charge of dealing with is going to be the military. They've got to fly you home, deal with their military bases and that kind of thing. Yeah, great. Perfect way. You know, if you distrust the military and government and stuff, that's exactly how you become a science experiment. Thankfully, you know, that's a fringe conspiracy and things, and, you know, luckily the military, you know, especially ours, is trying to help and do the best and, you know, move people around and use military bases if they need to do initial quarantine and stuff. You know, best practices, try and limit the effect and spread. So that's where we are with it, so at least we can try and take a lighter look on everything and see, hey, whole zombie movies, they were sort of right, you know? Boy, what else am I getting right in my haunt that, you know, the way society reacts to it? Maybe that's why we have such good lines and stuff in October. And hey, everybody, here's to having good lines and everything into October. Stay safe out there, stay healthy, and until next time, keep every minute scary.
Tune in next episode for another Haunt Minute. And in the meantime, share your opinion on the Big Scary Show Facebook page and on Twitter at Big Scary Store.
Hi, this is Josh Gates from Travel Channel's Expedition Unknown, reminding you to send all hate mail to storm@bigscaryshow.com.
Want to take your haunt to a new dimension of terror? Then let Dark Imaginings conjure up some ghoulish graphics and web design services for your home, haunt, or crypt. To see more of our products and services, drop by darkimaginings.com. Let us help you get ahead of your competition.
And ladies and gentlemen, of course, that music does mean it is time for the Roundtable of Terror here on The Big Scary Show. And you know, folks, if you've been watching the news, you know they've been talking about a couple of big things. One, this virus thing that's going around. And two, there's an election year. And whether or not those affect the upcoming haunted house season remains to be seen. but something that definitely will affect the upcoming haunted house season, if you're a haunt owner, is how are you going to get people to your haunt, a.k.a. advertising. We always seem to talk to this gentleman when it comes to the subject of advertising, getting the most out of your money. We hope you've already budgeted some time. And, of course, being an election year, every scrap of airtime is being bought up by every national, local, regional, and person running from whatever office out there. So now's the time to, I guess, start making your buys. But let's talk to a man who knows a little bit about some advertising and ways to make your haunt get that many more people, none other than the voice from hell, Mr. Dick Terhune, from his domicile in Litchfield, Connecticut. Dick, are you with us?
I'm here. Are we going to sing the theme song again?
We can if you like.
Will you join me?
You start.
Okay. Here we go. A one, two, a one, two, three. It's big. It's scary. It's the great big scary show.
Big scary
with Patrick, Dim, Storm, and Jerry. It's the great big scary show.
And me, Hook, Jim.
Yeah.
Thank you
for bringing us back down memory lane. We love that. So, but Dick, it's always great to have you here, as well as our hosts, including Storm.
Greetings from outside the quarantine zone.
Meat Hook Jim.
Greetings, and I'm just enjoying the jazz beat that Dick had going there. It was really cool.
You know he had jazz hands going. You just know it.
well, Jerry Vane. We're supposed to be doing with the coronavirus. You're supposed to do jazz hands instead of shaking hands and things like that. So it's topical.
That's probably going to be the official greeting at a Trans World. That or Spock's Live Long and Prosper, which I'm in favor of both.
Oh, no, here in Northeast, we already got an official one-handed salute greeting.
No doubt. Jerry Vane is not with us tonight.
He's out buying toilet paper, not because of the coronavirus, just because he really, really enjoys tacos.
With a nice Corona, probably. But Dick Terhune, the voice from hell, if you don't know who he has been doing the lecture circuit for many, many years at all the conventions and trade shows. He does voice work for haunted houses and many, many other things out there for radio and TV. He's also a transformer. We'll talk about that later. And many, many other things. Actor, savant, just general man about town. Dick. This is the time of year that haunts better be getting their budgets in order, especially when it comes to advertising, because as I mentioned, it's an election year and airplay is going to be hard to come by.
And it's not just airplay. You also need to be making your plans, your strategies, putting your buys in place for your online media. If you have not yet put things like Twitter and Snapchat into your mix, oh, my goodness, you really need to get on that right away. You know, the placement there is critical, and it cannot be said enough, and it cannot be said early enough. Make your buys now. You don't want to wake up middle of September and not have anything in place, because if you do, there will not be anything available. There will not be online media available for you. There will not be on-air media available for you. It will all be bought up. I can't stress it enough. Make your buys now.
And very well said. How important is it nowadays? I mean, we ask this question to you almost every time we talk to you. You know, people say radio is dead, newspapers are dead, TV commercials are dead. Everything is online, everything is social media, everything is, you know, website this and Twitter and Snapchat and whatever the kids are listening to and watching these days. You know, how much of a balance do you need to have between all those different things for a successful advertising campaign for your haunt?
Well, first of all, anyone who says radio is dead, TV is dead, these are people who are just not doing it right. The first thing you have to consider, who is your audience and who's buying the tickets? The answer to those two questions is not always the same. For example, if your audience tends to skew younger in the middle school, high school range, that's your audience, but who's buying the tickets? Well, mom and dad are probably buying the tickets. If your audience skews a little older, college age and up, that's your audience and they're buying the tickets, and you have to focus on that particular age group, that particular demographic. Radio, TV, yes, they are still important. If you are producing a commercial for TV, then you also have a video to place online. You also have something to put on your website. You also have something you could probably edit down for Snapchat. You could probably get some of your characters to do some great stuff on TikTok. It's all about where the eyeballs and the ears are. If you can make inroads into those organs, then you can get to the brain. And that's the one that you're certainly trying to get to the most. That's the one that you have to affect. The best way to do that, you know, it's not necessarily, oh, you put X amount of money on radio, and you put X amount of money on TV, and you put X amount of money on YouTube. The best way to do that is to have story-rich branding and content that is irresistible. And that's something I have talked about a lot, not just on this show, but in the sessions that I do at the various conventions, and when I'm talking with clients directly. It's making your branding and your marketing as story-rich as possible. And we can talk a little bit about that. It's really knowing and establishing a universe around your haunt. Even if these are things that will never be known by your audience, you have to know them. Why do these strange and terrible things happen here? What happened that created this situation? Why did people get murdered here? Why do supernatural creatures abound in this area? Answer those questions, and the answer is going to be a story. If you can, then
you're saying that just going, oh, it's like a funhouse gone wrong or a Disney ride gone wrong isn't enough?
I think it would be fair to say that, yes. No, what you really actually need. Sorry, go ahead.
I actually had a client of mine tell me that his entire backstory was monsters have taken over our haunted attraction.
What? No, let me write that down.
Every hack newspaper.
Absolutely true story. Ever. It was like, you know, 11 months out of the year, it's just a building, but in October, monsters have taken over. Sure enough. Filled with monsters, but they probably could use a little bit more than that. Now, this was years ago, and whatever this tells you, they're no longer in business. But, not saying that was the reason, but it sounds like they needed a little bit more of a backstory, shall we say.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, people talk about the backstory all the time. And honestly, whether the people who are standing in your queue know your backstory forwards and backwards, that doesn't matter. You need to know your backstory. Because if you know your backstory, and if everybody working at the haunt, everybody, the people who are parking cars, the people who are taking tickets, the people who are monitoring the queue, and the actors, and queue line entertainers, and technical staff, everybody, if everybody is on board and knows the story, they're going to project that. They're going to create a level of believability that is going to affect how your audience reacts to what you do. And if they react with fun, with fear, with laughter, they're going to have a better time. And if they have a better time, they're going to tell more people how great your haunt is, and success will beget success. Now, how do you translate that story into the marketing that gets those first people in? Sometimes that's a little trickier. And what I always tell my clients to do is, we don't lay out the whole story in everything we do. We take a snippet of it. Why did the little girl disappear in the snowstorm? She was only steps away from her home. What happened? Did she try to make it to the neighbor's house? Well, guess what? I just created a mystery that your brain wants to solve. And that's what your advertising should always be. A mystery that can only be solved by the purchase of a ticket.
It sure beats monsters have taken over our haunt.
and a few other things that I've heard. Yeah, absolutely.
No, and I love the idea of having your entire haunt know it. You know, you talk to some of these haunt overs, and they do have these amazing, extravagant backstories. But then you find out that, yeah, their own actors don't even know it, you know. And you listen to their commercial, and it's wacky radio guy going, ooh, spooky, aha, haunted house, my 9,000 square feet of oohs. You know,
oh, the square feet. Yes, everybody loves the square feet.
Yeah, because, yeah, you the fire marshal on your Sester, those are all who care about it. I love that line, yes, from your things. But it's a waste of time and stuff. But I mean, you know, even at Trails, you know, having worked there and stuff, if everybody else knows, because the people are getting out of their cars and they're asking that number one, you're still doing marking in your parking lot, they're asking that number one question as they get out of the car: is this place scary? Which, you know, biggest number one question. Well, you're already here, and you've all right, I guess you think it is. But they can just up that factor, even if your parking lot attendants know of a character or a scene down there. Oh, you're wondering if it's scary? Well, when you get down to the swamp, ask for Big Earl. Just something like that becomes a marketing gimmick.
Absolutely. It's the simple stuff. Or even if the parking attendant would say something like, I don't know, I'm not going in there. That's why I'm out here. I mean, you're still creating a story, and you're staying in line with the story of your haunt. That's all I'm saying. Everybody needs to know it. That should be part of the actor training. That should be part of the staff training. And, you know, think about it as a stage play. Every person who is acting in a stage play knows their role. They know their lines, and they know that it has to work together to make a cohesive story that moves forward. If all of a sudden your leading actor starts shouting nonsense or starts doing lines from another play, it ruins everything. It breaks the fourth wall, as we say in the acting world. You'd never want to break that wall when you're in the haunt world. You want to absolutely create a universe, create an environment. Make it start with your advertising, because your advertising, your marketing, they are the first contact you ever have with the people who are buying tickets. You got to get them there, and you have to keep it moving forward. Your marketing, your advertising, whether it be radio or a YouTube video or something on Snapchat or something on Twitter, it's got to move them to the next stage, which is the place where they buy the tickets, which is usually your website, and more of your story. And more of that atmosphere has to be available in your online presence. And again, it just keeps it moving forward. You have to make it impossible for them not to click the Buy Tickets Now button.
I don't think there's a single actor out there that hasn't been asked the question, what are you supposed to be? And like you said, with that backstory, at least you have an answer. Unless you're one of the strong, silent types that don't say anything or just giggle maniacally. Something like that, but you know, if you can say a few words as to what it is, and then it makes a logical sense within the confines of the story that the haunt is putting out there.
That sure, even silence, better. Even silence can be an answer if that's your character. I think that from this conversation, everybody can tell that we're talking about total immersion. That. Everybody has to be on board. Everybody has to live this every second that they are working. You know, you have to be ready for it when you come in. You have to carry it through the whole night. And, you know, then in the parking lot, when you're out of costume, out of makeup, and on your way home, then you can shake it off. But not until then. Not until then.
And this is all to maximize the little time and little exposure that you have for each person, right? This is you know, not to, you know, that you have to have this giant scheme and everyone has to understand it. It's we're explaining to you how ads will work instead of just throwing money for a radio thing that somebody will just hear and say, oh, well, that was creepy.
Yeah, absolutely true. I mean, if we want to use your example of come one, come all to the scariest haunted house in Pennsylvania, 90,000 square feet of sheer terror. That's not going to bring anybody. Instead, you have to give me a reason give me a reason to come and spend my hard-earned money with you.
You could almost hear Thriller playing behind you as you said that, too.
And too many times I've heard that. That's actually why I got into this business. Because at the time that I was actually thinking of opening my own haunted attraction, and unfortunately I was not able to do that, but in my research, I discovered all these really horrible commercials, and they were all Bad Lugosi with Thriller in the background and some thunder and scream sound effects, and it was just terrible. So that's when I said, hey, wait a minute, I know a thing or two about advertising. Maybe we could raise the bar here. And so I started working with clients throughout the country. And you know, I don't think we even think about it as advertising anymore. We think of it as storytelling. What story are we going to tell the people this year? What story are we going to put out there that's going to make them want to know the next chapter of the story? There's nothing more compelling or contagious than a great story. Nobody wants to see or hear a commercial. Everybody loves a good story. So that's where it starts.
I do want to remind you, you are listening to the Roundtable of Terror here on the Big Scary Show with our host, the voice from hell, Dick Terhune, our normal co-host, minus Jerry for right now. We're going to take a quick break and listen to something that Dick Terhune actually helped create.
Ooh, tasty.
We'll be right back.
In 1897, Dr. Alexander Hammond arrived at an institution for the criminally insane, only to discover the unsolved murders of several guards.
Drivers, where are we?
Jerry Bain takes you into Black Moon Asylum, a twisted abyss of torment, madness, and the horrifying mystery of Patient 292.
Time for your medication.
Black Moon Asylum, a symphonic journey into darkness from instrumentalist Jerry Vane. Download Black Moon Asylum at jerryvane.com, iTunes, cdbaby.com, Amazon MP3, and your favorite download site.
And we're back talking advertising, marketing, and ways to get people to come to your haunt, especially in an election year where we're all going to die in some global pandemic. But anyway, we have our special guest, Dick Terhune, on here, the master of getting people to your haunts for various means. And I wanted to bring this up because before the break, Dick had mentioned the social media platform TikTok. Now, being an older guy, and I have no idea what TikTok is, you know, I can tell you what Facebook and Twitter and, you know, Instagram is, and barely know what Instagram is, but, you know, it seems that social media platforms kind of come and go. You know, Snapchat was big for a while, Vine was big for a while. Nowadays, I don't think Vine's there anymore, or no one's using it anymore, or Snapchat. I don't know. Is the technology moving too quickly? By the time a haunt gets a Snapchat account, no one's using it? Or by the time you use this new TikTok thing by October, TikTok could be replaced by something else?
Well, this is why, among other things, you should have a social media marketing person on your staff.
Who's probably 14 or 15 and actually knows these things.
You know, I do not doubt it. I do not doubt it at all. You should have someone who is a user, and you should have someone who is fluent with the platform and who is capable of producing content for that platform. And if you, Mr. or Mrs. Haunt Owner, are not that person, you swallow your pride right now and wash it down with a big old cup of gin, and you get someone who understands social media, because that's where your audience is. That's where they live. You got to get them there. And you need somebody who understands that. Shall I say it again? Get a social media marketing manager.
I mean, at the very least, you should have somebody on board so that you're not doing it all by yourself. It is a big lift.
It really is. I mean, I understand that most owners of haunted attractions are not just sitting in a big leather chair behind a desk, you know, doling out assignments to people. you know, look at their hands, where they've cut themselves on various props, and they're pulling the splinters out from where they've been putting things together, and where, you know, that little abrasion there where the screw gun kind of missed. No, everybody's doing everything. Please don't be the person who does everything when it comes not only to your social media marketing, but to all your marketing and your advertising. You really need somebody who focuses on that. If you don't, what's going to happen is you're going to settle for that 9,000 square feet of sheer terror commercial that the guys at the radio station are going to put together, and you're going to say, I am too damn tired to think about it. Okay, here's my money.
Do you think that social media has been overall over the past 10 years a positive for the haunt industry? I mean, it's free advertising in a lot of instances, but it also comes with another set of problems.
I don't necessarily go for the free advertising model. I think you should do paid placement if you're doing Twitter, if you're doing Snapchat, if you're doing Facebook. And most importantly, you have to do it right. You see, what I never want to see is a Facebook page about a haunt that says, here's the progress on our set build. Look at these great props we picked up at Transworld. Hey, these are our actors in some scary masks. Bet you don't want to run into them in the dark. And what am I circling back around to? The story. Everything you do has to tell the story. You want a great example of someone who is story immersive? The guys at Netherworld. Go to their website. Go to their social media on Facebook, wherever they are, Instagram. Look at everything they do. You don't see kids in rubber masks. You don't see set builds. You don't hear references to props or special effects. You see a world. You see a universe. That's marketing, folks. That's marketing at its finest.
Sounds like a big thing. Now, granted, you know, Netherworld does occasionally post somebody in a mask, but it's like, this was, you know, looking back from 2016, this was one of our people. You know, they kind of show you what they have done in the past, not necessarily what they do in the future. Is that something that you would find, you know, beneficial?
I think it's good. Yeah, I mean, it's part of the story, and I know some of the things that Ben has done is featuring things from their monster museum there. And what are they doing? They're advertising another element of their attraction. So yeah, they're doing it right. They're absolutely. You want the great example. Netherworld, I believe, is a great example, and you should aspire to that standard of advertising and marketing.
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons they're one of the best haunts in the country. Looks like the hauntstrumentalist Jerry Vane has joined us. Welcome, Jerry. Glad to see you made it. And we were just talking before the break that the commercial that we run during this for your CD was done by Dick. How did that come about? Was that something that you asked him to do? Did he volunteer? Or how did that come about?
Wait, is that who did it? I could have sworn I was using the pitch shifter. I don't
know. you was using a bitch slapper, not a pitch shifter.
The bitch slapper with a pitch shifter with a drop tune. Basically, what it boiled down to was he had done the commercial for The Attic. And we were actually at one point talking about doing one for Virus 308. And unfortunately, circumstances at the time with his schedule and everything could not work into it. So when it came down to doing Black Moon, it was more of a line of, it's like, okay, this has a story, this has a legit storyline behind it. You know, I sent him the information. He's like, he goes, well, what's it about? And I told him, and I think I sent you the whole album, actually, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you came back later, it's done. I got it. It's done. And I'm like, all right, cool. So he sent me the commercial and was like, yeah, this is, with a couple of tweaks here and there, just because, you know, there were some things about the storyline he wasn't quite sure about. Should I mention it? Should I not mention it? we tweaked it, and I think the only thing you changed on it was I went from being the haunt rocker to the haunt instrumentalist. I think that was literally the only thing we changed on it.
Yeah, you're right.
Was that. I mean, it was, bam, And that was the same thing with the attic. I gave him the premise of the attic, and he came back, and it was like, I couldn't have said this any better. I mean, he nailed the premise of what it was about. And within 30 seconds, I'm going to give you exactly what this is about, and you're going to go, holy shit. That was literally what happened. I literally listened to the commercial, looked at my wife, Dawn, went, holy shit. Done. I mean, that's one thing. If you know what you want to get across and you have the right people involved to push your marketing to that aspect, it becomes almost a no-brainer, and the communication is seamless. If you are humming and hawing, I don't know, I'm not sure, blah, blah, blah. Well, you're wasting your time, their time, your money. They don't mind taking your money while you're wasting your time. But with the timescape that everybody has to work with to get their point across, you want to get that aspect of, I don't want to give too much. I want to give that tease. Bam. That's what's going to get people's attention. And many people who bought the CD came back with exactly saying, I bought your CD because of the commercial I heard. And I end up using the dialogue.
That's why they should be buying tickets to the haunted house too, because that is exactly the process. Distilling what is a very big story down into 60 or 30 or 15 or even 5 seconds. And by the way, here's how you get it. So, yeah, that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. And if you can get your point across in that short time span, some people think, oh, well, if it's that short of a commercial, I'm not getting the point across. No, actually, what you're doing is you're actually amping up the anticipation of, oh, what is this? What's this about? What am I? You that commercial will rev up the anticipation and the need to, I need to go find out what this is about.
Yeah, I mean, think about experiences when you see a movie trailer. You don't see the whole movie. Sometimes you see the best parts of the movie, but you don't see the whole movie. You know that if you want to see the rest of the story, you have to buy a ticket.
Exactly.
I think this is fascinating because, right before the break, we were exactly talking about this, telling the story. And I want to ask you, Dick, how, Jerry sent you a CD, sent you some notes. How do you, as a voice actor, as a commercial creator, how do you come up with an idea that I'm going to go in this direction versus I'm going to go in that direction? I mean, I know sometimes your client will probably say, I want you to say this, 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 and I want you to do this. But, when they do give you that freedom to come up with an idea, how do you roll with an idea like that?
I think the great thing is that, even though I'm working for or with a haunt, I am independent. I am an outsider. So I come to it with a fresh perspective, a fresh set of eyes, and with a fresh voice. And I will try various things. I'll try this angle, I'll try this angle, I'll try this angle. And then I determine which direction, which perspective is the strongest, which is going to have the broadest appeal to the most specific audience, which is the one that's going to hook the imagination and make someone act upon it to the point of spending money to buy a ticket. Sometimes there is a good bit of back and forth. Sometimes it's just as easy as it was with Jerry. He gave me a very, very clear story, and I knew exactly what I wanted to do with it as soon as I heard it.
And it comes down to also, like you and I, when you and I were talking, the type of voice, the type of, and with your case being a voice actor, type of voice. I don't think I'm like, hi guys, we got a story here, would not quite work with Black Moon Asylum. Coming out with a Jerry Lewis voice would kind of detract a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
there was a reason
you didn't call Gilbert Gottfried, yeah.
Right. I can hear Iago from Aladdin trying to do the commercial. I mean, the voice for both commercials you've done, you knew exactly, okay, this is what we're going for, and you knew how to tailor all aspects of the marketing for that commercial to match it.
So this touches on a very, very important point. Hire a professional. Don't just turn it over to your cousin who went to broadcasting school. Don't just let the wacky morning DJ get a hold of it. Hire someone who understands. Hire someone who can act out the story in a compelling way. That is what's going to set you apart every single time. If let's take an example of a radio commercial. If the guy at the radio station who does the commercials for the used car dealer and for the weight loss clinic and for the insurance agency and for the clothing store is now doing the haunted house commercial, it's going to sound like the used car dealer and the insurance agency and the weight loss clinic. And there's not going to be that thing that puts you above the noise. There's not going to be that thing that cuts through and makes me listen to you. Or in the case of video, makes me watch you. Or in the case of social media, makes me interact with you. Hire professionals. Hire voice actors. Hire professional videographers. Hire social media managers. You know, there are advertising agencies that work specifically for haunted attractions. And the one I've worked with most is Fearworm Hauntvertising. So if you go to Transworld and you see the Fearworm guys and you haven't talked with them yet, by all means, have a conversation. Wouldn't it be great if you didn't have to do all the media planning and the media buying and sitting down and trying to write 30 seconds of copy or whatever? If you had an agency working for you to market, advertise, and promote your haunt. Now, if marketing, advertising, and promotion are not things that are in your wheelhouse, hire professionals.
We had an advertising agency in San Diego, and this was back, I want to say, late 70s, early 80s. We had a gentleman known in San Diego, Cal Worthington, and his dog Spot.
Oh, yeah.
For I think it was Chevrolet, I think it was. And all of a sudden, him and the unknown, not unknown scare actor, the unknown comic, doing commercials for pizza places and all these things. And I'm sorry, when you have the unknown comic, some guy with a bag on his head from the Gong Show, advertising for your pizza place, which had great pizza and great ambience, and it was a company called Organ Power Pizza out in Chula Vista, and you got the unknown comic on there, that's a sure sign of death. I'm sorry.
So true. And I remember Cal Worthington. It was great for his car dealership, but right. When he tried to do the other stuff, it's like, what the hell?
Yeah, he's advertising for, I think he was advertising for a gym. The guy is 300 pounds, has obviously had a long life. He's wearing all white, looking like Boss Hogg from Dukes of Hazzard, and he's trying to talk you to going to Jack LaLanne's, spa clinic.
Hmm.
No.
Something doesn't match up there.
No. I remember these very vividly.
Yeah.
It's like, no. And then you got the unknown comic who ended up being the San Diego Chicken for the Padres. And he's advertising for a pizza chain.
Jerry, you know way too much about the unknown comic.
Yeah, well, I live in San Diego.
I know he starred in a movie with Linda Blair. There's your little horror aspect to it, I guess.
That is true. That is true.
You won't mention the name of the movie. It was really, really awful.
Well, nobody can remember it. That's why nobody mentions it.
Yes, I'm not. Right now, myself.
Now, actually, you touched on something that I would like to speak to. Sometimes a what-the-hell moment is not a bad thing, but it still has to be in context. I call that the head snap. The thing that catches your ear or catches your eye that makes you go, what was that? And then you're in the story. But the unknown comic and Cal Worthington, they don't count. Not for this.
Now you mentioned Fearworm's going to be at Transworld. You mentioned to us before the show that you are not going to be at Transworld. You normally do. And yes. I know you normally go to Midwest and HauntCon and West Coast Haunters Convention putting on seminars. You are not at HauntCon. You are not coming to Transworld. Where are you going to be putting on seminars? And do you have a topic that you will be specifically teaching about at any of these conventions that are coming up?
Well, first of all, if anyone listening went to HauntCon with the intention of taking the two classes that I was going to teach, I apologize to you. A family emergency prevented me from going to HauntCon. Don't worry, I'll be back. I'll make it up to you. Not going to Transworld for other reasons right now. The timing is just bad. It kills me that I'm not going to be there because it's like the biggest, best, baddest family reunion ever. Oh, in addition to the fact that we get to do business. But here's where I will be. I will be at the West Coast Haunters Convention in Portland, Oregon in May. And I will be at Midwest Haunters. And the session that I am announced for at West Coast is, you know, kind of what we've been talking about, but more in detail. It's called Here's What's Wrong with Your Advertising and Here's How to Fix It.
And how about at Midwest? Will it be a variation of that, or will it be something altogether different?
Something a bit different, and that's still in the to-be-announced file.
Excellent. I have attended many of your seminars, and they are incredibly entertaining, and you always have a packed house. So if you do get an opportunity to go catch Dick at West Coast or Midwest, absolutely do so, because it is a great seminar.
And if I could also shout this out to anyone going to any conference, any convention where, you know, education is part of the program. Everybody wants to take the how-tos, the makeup, the actor training, the props building. My recommendation is, yes, you take those. Sure, absolutely. Or send people to them. But you, my dear friend, my dear haunt owner, take as many of the business sessions as you can. Learn as much as you can about the business side, because you don't know everything. The person who's presenting the session doesn't know everything. But between the two of you, you're going to find out a lot. Please, education cannot be stressed enough.
Excellent. You know, we're looking at the clock, looking at starting to wind down here. Anything from the other hosts as far as questions or comments or anything like that?
Actually, I was going to mention something to Dick, and I don't know if you're aware of this part, Dick, but my daughter, Shelby, is training to be a professional wrestler.
That's so cool!
It is, and she's just getting to the point where she's having to work on her character and the gimmick and everything, so, you know, I've been giving her all kinds of suggestions about backstory and really building the story of this character she wants to create, because she graduates in a couple of months, and then from there she might start working the local circuit.
Has she got some ideas of what sort of character she wants to create for this?
She's been waffling a lot.
Okay,
she really has, and I'm letting her feed me some things, and I'm trying to steer away from really bad ideas.
Well, you know, let me tell you, if an extra brain would be helpful,
yes,
ask her to reach out. I would be happy to be a sounding board or to bounce some new ideas, because character creation is one of my favorite things.
I will have her reach out to you. I know she really adores you and really enjoyed your class that one time, and I'll mention it to her, and hopefully you guys can combine brain pans to see what you can come up with.
That'd be great. I'd love that.
Cool. I'll let her know. Other than that, I've got nothing.
Well, I think going on what you were saying, Dick, with going to these business seminars, anything you can get with it, you know, one of the biggest things I learned doing it was it's not always that, you know, these business seminars will be exactly your fit or that you're going to come out of it with some, you know, huge life-changing thing to increase your haunt by 20%. One of the biggest things that I've come out of it is, you know, finding out what my competition is doing and what they can do. And even, you know, being prepared for that type of thing, because, you know, if you're like, oh, I don't need a better radio commercial, everybody else's suck, and they hire the voice from hell, you're in a pickle. I mean, you know, I'd work with haunts and they'd be like, oh, we don't want to grow too much. I'm like, that's great. If growing too much is the biggest worry, you know, okay, fine. It's dropping by 10% is the biggest problem that I'm worried about. You know, you have somebody come in with a competition or something with it. And, you know, one of the things with you is you're regional. When somebody hires you, that's you're their only client for a certain area. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that is true. And there are some markets that I'm in where there are multiple major attractions. I will only sign with one. If you hire me, I'm your guy. I work for you exclusively. And I think that's very important for a couple of reasons. One, because I'm creating an identity for you. I'm working with your brand and your brand only. Also, if I made myself available to two or three other haunts in your market, not only would I be working against you, I'd be working against myself. And that would just dilute things. And to me, it's just not right. You know, I'm going to dance with the one that brung me. If you bring me into your market, I only work with you.
Yeah, I think that's an important part for especially some of the smaller haunts. I hear this a lot. They're like, oh, I don't know how to compete with the bigger haunt down the way. This is a way to do it. You know, you get Dick Terhune, and believe me, his cost and what he's doing, he's giving you a bigger product that, you know, some of these other big haunts, they got to have entire departments pulling this together. You can really, you know, save and get something exclusive for your area on a deal just by attending and seeing what works for you.
I do try to bring as much to the table as I possibly can, and I try to make it a value that's fair to both of us. That's the best I can do.
And I just want to hit again, you know, you'd mentioned earlier about, you know, the story and having it as part of your marketing, as seeing marketing as a larger product of it. Just wanted to touch again on that because I just see so many haunts, they will have these complex storylines, but they don't know how to get it out there. And they think that just having a tagline on a brochure or using the color purple every year in their haunt sometimes explains, oh, why, yes, no, don't use it. The lady in purple, that's our whole thing. Purple writing on the things is getting that. Can owners over or under sell their concept in a marketing, and is there a way to avoid that in like a two second digestible snapshot?
Yes, hire a professional.
Awesome.
I got to ask this question here. There used to be a haunt in the market that I live in that ran the exact same commercial every year on TV. It was, you know, it was early CGI. You could tell it was early CGI. They probably ran this thing 5, 6, 7 years in a row. And, you know, they bought a nice block of advertising, but it was the same 30-second commercial. And, you know, it just got kind of boring after a while. And I wonder how many people do you see out there? They spend thousands of dollars. They get this really high-tech, really cool, super fancy, whatever commercial, and then they never change. Whether they never change the haunt or they never change the story, you know, it's always, you know, the commercial that I would see with this one haunt, you know, it was very specific to what they did. It was very apropos for what they did, but it just seems to me that this was probably a haunt that never changed its theme, that never changed its story, that basically did the same thing year after year. And again, they're no longer in business, but they did have a brilliant commercial. I mean, do you see that a lot? I mean, you know, if I'm a haunt owner and I spend X dollars on a commercial, I probably want to run it more than 6 weeks out of the year if I'm throwing a lot of money out there. Do they translate year to year a lot of times, or do they constantly need to upgrade every year?
I think in a constantly shifting and changing media landscape, you have to move with it in order to capture the attention of your audience. I don't see that one commercial forever model happening as much anymore. But let me tell you, when I sit down with a client who says, my main competition has run the same commercial for the last 15 years, I get a little excited because I know that when I put something together for them and it hits the radio or it hits TV or it goes on YouTube or wherever we decide to unveil it, it's going to make a head-snapping splash in that market. What? There's something new? Ah! I got to find out more.
Tremendous. Any final questions, gentlemen? Well, Dick, as always, it's a great honor and a pleasure to have you here. You know, shame we won't see you at Transworld, but, you know, for those going to Midwest or West Coast, be sure and check out his seminars. They are incredibly entertaining, and I know I've seen probably 6 or 7 of them over the years, and they are just fantastic. But this is the time of the roundtable we call the plugs. So for people wanting information, find out what market you're in. If you're a haunt and you're in an untapped market, how do they get in touch with you? Maybe hear some examples of your work, see some examples of your work, find out upcoming schedules. And we'll even touch on some of your other work. You are a transformer, which is the coolest thing ever.
I got a great job. Yep.
How can people get more information?
You can always go to voicefromhell.com. That's a very easy thing to do. You can search Voice from Hell on Facebook. There will be other social media platforms coming soon. Don't worry. I'm practicing what I preach. Those are easy ways. You can always just come talk to me at the conventions. This is, you know, when you're a voice actor, you know, people ask me, what do you do for a living? I tell them I sit in a padded room talking to myself all day. Going to the conventions and meeting with people in this great, great community family that we call haunting is just the best. I love to meet you in person. So if you're going to be at West Coast, if you're going to be at Midwest, please say hi. I'll say hi back. I will. And yes, you did mention Transformers, but I'm surprised that nobody mentioned the Super Bowl.
I was thinking I mentioned
the Super Bowl before we started it. Before we started, I did mention that.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. Right.
Well, there was that one video game too that you were part of, but
yeah, there's that. That's old news though, right?
It's still news. His name's still on it. Thank you very much.
World of Warcraft. Yes, I'm still the Worgen in World of Warcraft, but some people know, some people don't, that I've been doing the national commercials for Little Caesars Pizza for a few years now. I'm not the pizza guy. I'm the other voice guy. And this time, we were in the Super Bowl. It was the commercial with Rainn Wilson, who's Dwight from The Office.
Yes.
And the commercial was Little Caesars Delivered. Huh. That's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And that was the premise. And so if you haven't seen it, you know, go to YouTube, Little Caesar Super Bowl commercial. And that tag at the end, that's not the pizza guy, is me. So that's my 5 seconds of Super Bowl glory. But then a couple nights later, I was watching The Tonight Show, and a different version of the commercial came on, which is more me. So it's kind of fun. But yeah, Transformers. We're getting ready to start airing season 3 of Transformers Cyberverse. And my two characters, Prowl, the Autobot, and another character named MacAdam, are playing significant roles. Also, during season 3, I will be taking another role. I will be playing a threat so dire, it forces the Autobots and Decepticons to work together.
Oh no, somebody got married.
Foreshadowing. Dun, dun, dun.
And that's how you do it, people.
Well, now I want to watch this show again. I've seen season 1 and a little of season 2. I haven't been able to binge watch it, so definitely going to have to go back then. And now I have an urge for a double pepperoni. Anyway.
I had that earlier. But anyway.
Nice. So anyway, Dick Terhune, it's always a pleasure again to have you here on the Big Scary Show. We look forward to hearing about your seminars at Midwest and West Coast. And again, hate that we're going to miss you at Transworld this year, but you know, there will be other times where we'll be able to catch you. And of course, voicefromhell.com to check out all his fine stuff. But of course, we could not do this Roundtable of Terror without our hosts, including Storm.
See, I'm at a loss. I had it all lined up about how this was, you know, the best roundtable since sliced bread, and see if any of our listeners got it. You know, it maybe even could have been a bonus gruesome giveaway question, but instead, we just had a very enjoyable, you know, 60 minutes with Dick Terhune, which is always fantastic. And I have more stuff to ask him about off the air for more time with Dick Terhune.
We might have to get a gruesome giveaway question out of this one. Anyway, Meat Hook Jim.
You know, I was cleaning the kitchen the other day, and I found two Voice from Hell mugs.
He's gotten into merchandising? Merchandising.
Yeah.
He's got swag. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We got swag.
I had no idea. I guess I don't win door prizes at conventions. Anyway, the Haunstrumentalist, late but always appreciate it when he shows up. Jerry Vane.
Yeah, and he did two of my commercials. Take that. Autobots my ass.
My name is Drew Badger, down here in Charlotte, getting ready to head off to Transworld, folks. If you get a chance, come by booth 1434. Say hello, because I'll also say hello back. This is the Roundtable of Terror here on The Big Scary Show. And ladies and gentlemen, let's find out if you're listening carefully. It is time for the March edition of the Gruesome Giveaway, sponsored by our good friends at ScreamlineStudios.com. Be sure to visit ScreamlineStudios.com, peruse all they have to offer. We're sure they have something you will love. I'm about to ask a question. The answer is in the show. Email us that answer along with your name and number before midnight on March 23rd. To contest@bigscaryshow.com, and you could be randomly selected as the winner. Family members of the Big Scary Show and previous winners, not eligible to win, folks. Sorry. Now, without further ado, the question for the March edition of the Gruesome Giveaway is, what two conventions will Dick Terhune be speaking at? If you think you know that answer, email us again, contest@bigscaryshow, with your name, your phone number, and, of course, the answer, before midnight on March 23rd, and you could be randomly selected as the winner for the March edition of the Gruesome Giveaway, again, sponsored by our wonderful friends at Screamline Studios, who keep supplying us with these great prizes that we love to give away every single month here on The Big Scary Show. Good luck.
Are you looking for a comprehensive ticketing solution for your haunted attraction? HauntPay has the answer. We skip the features you don't need and focus on the ones you like, such as timed ticketing and repeat time slots, variable ticket types, bundle and combo tickets, social media discounts. And now featuring all-in-one options, including managing your tickets online and at the door, as well as upselling and managing your merchandise and concessions, with a comprehensive report on everything at the end of the night. Head on over to HauntPay.com and get started in 60 seconds for free.
Dime Monster Dime, lucky number 666 on The Big Scary Show.
Right over there, do you see my limousine? It only goes to show just how we roll. I'm the man with the fan and the ball in my hat. I'm the star you've come to see. Strong on before the night grows old. I got your backstage pass to Satan, baby. 666. He's a song that proves some things. Lucky number 666. Virgin Mary's turning tricks. Drugs, whores, and gold guitars with diamond studded strings. When you ring my bell, I sing. This mansion used to be a church on the ground, sprouts demon seed. Take my hand, come on, let's go, let's rock and roll. I got your backstage pass to Satan, babe. I keep it safe here in my pants. So reach right in my pocket, honey, grab a handful of romance. Make sweet and nasty loving, baby, through the night until the morn. But in 9 months, don't you call it me when your Satan child is born. Lucky number 666. Jesus on the crucifix. Lucky number 666. Virgin Mary's turning tricks. Lucky number 666. Jesus on the crucifix. Lucky number 666. Virgin Mary's turning tricks. Till the morn, but in 9 months don't come calling me when your Satan child is born. Lucky number 666, Jesus on the crucifix. Lucky number 666, Virgin Mary's turning tricks. Lucky number 666, Jesus on the crucifix. Lucky number 666, Virgin Mary's turning tricks.
Come now and explore the possibility of the impossible.
Centronics International presents a terrifying journey into the supernatural, narrated by the master of slithering evil, Rod Serling.
It is tradition that ghosts and ghouls and various other citizens of the grotesque wrap themselves in malevolent mists and deep darkness, disguised as all manner of things. This is a terrifying encounter with the unknown.
Spun by devils. Encounter with the unknown.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome. Watch out, don't trip over that torso. It's time for Between the Corpses.
Greetings, listeners. Meat Hook Jim here. And I decided to expand a little bit on my previous episode's facts about burial practices. And this time I've found a list of different facts of burial customs on a website called Factimate. And I thought I'd read a few of these to you. The Zoroastrians believed that if a dead body touched anything, that thing was now spoiled. And dead bodies are indeed one of the most common ways disease spreads. The body would be cleansed in bull urine before it was placed on top of a circular tower called the Tower of Silence for vultures to have their way with. In ancient England, suicide was seen as a crime, and suicided bodies were buried at crossroads. This was done to confuse the spirit of the deceased, as suicidal spirits were believed to return home and haunt their village. In Mongolia, the traditional burial ceremony is an intricate process led by the local lama. How the ceremony unfolds is up to the lama's discretion, but they're the only one allowed to touch the body. They pray, place blue stones in the bed of the body, and a white veil is placed over the face to prevent evil spirits from penetrating. When the body is ready for burial, it is passed through a small hole or window to prevent evil from slipping through. At the grounds, outside the village, the body is outlined in stones, and dogs may consume the remains. Afterwards, the stones are kept in place as a memory of the deceased. For the Maasai of southern Kenya and northern Tanzania, burial is reserved for chiefs solely as a sign of respect and given to no one else. The body is seen as harmful to the soil, and corpses are therefore left for scavengers to consume. The Maasai do not believe in an afterlife. Once your journey in life is over, it's over. Kiribati is a sovereign island nation in the Pacific, where the traditional burial custom is for people to lay their deceased out in their homes for up to 12 days, depending on their status, before interning them. Months after the internment, the body is dug up and the skull removed, clean, polished, and placed in their homes. Custom says presence of the skull allows for the spirit to be welcomed by the native god, Naka, to the northern end of the island. El Muerto Parayo has arisen in Puerto Rico in place of traditional wakes because why not freak out family and friends? Instead of having the body in a casket, the corpse is propped up in a chair with its eyes held open while an elaborate memorial is staged around them. In Korea, they have had an issue with burial space recently due to extremely mountainous territory and 50 million people. The solution? Cremate corpses and then compress their ashes into beads. You can choose the colors and numbers of beads and display them throughout your home. When the plague was running rampant in England in 1665, the mayor of London ordered that all graves be 6 feet deep, birthing the phrase we now know. Western burials often face the east. This goes back to the pagan desire to have the dead facing the rising sun. Some people just want one more lap dance before they're in the ground forever. In Taiwan, a tradition has developed of strippers being hired for burial ceremonies where they spice up the ceremony. In the Philippines, they have several interesting burial customs. The Apayos of the island Luzon will fill the coffin of a corpse with protection for the deceased's journey and then bury them below the kitchen of their homes. This way you'll never lose grandma's recipe. Trees breathe life into us, so why not return the favor? The Cavitano people live near Manila. When reaching death, a person will choose a tree, which is then hollowed out in anticipation of their death. For burial, they are entombed vertically inside the tree. Turning over in your grave, or as the Malagasy of Madagascar call it, fama dehana, doesn't have to be a bad thing. Once every few years, a body is retrieved from its resting place, and a celebration is thrown for them by their family. The turning of the bones, as it is known, is basically a big party where family members wrap the body in cloth and dance to music with them. The custom is based on the belief that the soul doesn't exit the body immediately, but rather takes time. Many people believe in the process of renewal, where the soul moves on from the body, and the Vajrayana Buddhists of Tibet and Mongolia have sky burials to aid the process. After someone's death, the body will be placed atop a mountain and left to naturally decompose and, you know, get eaten by scavengers. Instead of wasting the body, they use it to feed the rest of surrounding life. Though now obsolete, sati was a funeral custom of ancient India. If a man died leaving a widow, he would be burned on a pyre and the widow would have to jump in and join him in death. Though sati was often seen as voluntary, other cases involve forcing the widow to immolate herself. Various locations in southern Asia feature a true sight to see, hanging coffins. There were a few ethnic tribes, most notably the Bo people of China, who hung coffins from the face of mountains and inside caves. They believed the soul would be blessed eternally by this burial, and that it would prevent beasts from taking the bodies. Carpenters in the greater Accra region of Ghana have embraced building coffins as an art form. Tradition has developed for people to be buried in coffins which represent what they loved in life, and an artful figurative coffin is built specifically for them. They can be anything, from roosters to battleships to a pack of cigarettes. In ancient years, the art world has taken notice, and a few carpenters have achieved international success for building a coffin. In Taiwan and parts of Vietnam, the act of Bok Mo is performed, where new generations of people dig up their ancestors' remains and care for them by cleaning their bones. In Fiji, a sort of contained suicide was practiced by one tribe. If a family member found their parents to be too much of a burden, they would approach the parents and tell them so, beginning a process in which the parents decided to either be strangled by their children or buried alive. Two wonderful options. And another tradition in Fiji was to strangle the loved ones of the deceased, who, it was believed, would then join the deceased in the afterlife. This culture believed that you entered the afterlife in the state you were last in while alive, so it was best to kill loved ones sooner before any potential disfigurements befell them. And that's just a brief list of different types of burial practices across the world. I think I'm going to dig a little bit deeper into some of these and bring up some more information by types of traditions in certain types of the world. Now maybe I'll focus a little bit more on like the Sati in India and some of the Vietnamese rituals. I think I'll move that way forward with Between the Corpses to give you more of a Between the Corpses type of view. This is Meat Hook Jim. Catch you next time.
Passion is what drives us. The passion to be the best. For over 10 years, that passion has taken us from eBay to becoming the driving force in the haunted house industry. And we are just getting started. From flex props to 9-foot giants. Great details, great looks, and great pricing is the foundation we are built on. Our heart beats Halloween and haunts. We are a creepy collection. Let us deliver our passion to your haunted attraction this season. CreepyCollection.com. Now that's creepy.
Once again, Frighteners, welcome to yet another edition of the Viceroy's Haunted Vista. First of all, with things like Transworld, Whorehound, and any number of public events being postponed due to the fears over the coronavirus, I'm not going to make any dumb jokes about it. Suffice it to say, this too shall pass, but I must say, the media needs to take a chill pill. Nuff said. With his recent announcement of his Parkinson's disease and the several cancellations of worldwide tours, I felt it was time and appropriate to take a look at the career of Ozzy Osbourne as he has released his most recent and more than likely his final studio album in Ordinary Man. So without any further ado, let's step on board the crazy train.
All aboard!
Ozzy Osbourne's solo career would not have happened had he had not been fired from Black Sabbath. In fact, Ozzy's solo career is so intertwined with the career of Black Sabbath, it's next to impossible to pry each other apart, but I digress. A few years ago, I did a two-part special on the career of Black Sabbath, so I am not going to comment on Ozzy's contributions, save for when they are intertwined with Sabbath, which was pretty frequently, to be perfectly honest. It all began in early 1979 when, after their 10th anniversary Never Say Die tour, Black Sabbath parted company with Ozzy Osbourne, all band members completely entrenched in drug and alcohol abuse, Ozzy being the worst of the lot, and band leader Tony Iommi pretty much kicked him to the curb. Ozzy locked himself in a hotel room for several months, eating pizza, having booze delivered, and just basically decided to throw himself one last party. Enter Sharon Arden. Seeing what potential Ozzy did have as a solo artist, kicked him in the rear end, cleaned him up, and basically got him on the road to recovery, auditioning musicians. Enter one Randy Rhoads from California, late of Quiet Riot, probably one of the most revered heavy metal guitarists with a classical bent ever. Add in bassist Bob Daisley and drummer Lee Kerslake, and voila, the Blizzard of Oz was born, or actually more effectively speaking, Ozzy's first solo band. Blizzard of Oz, released in early to mid-1980, which followed on the heels, by the way, of Black Sabbath's own comeback album with Ronnie James Dio, Heaven and Hell, did not make as big of a wave in the United States as it did in England and Europe. Ozzy and his band, consisting of Rhodes, drummer Tommy Aldridge, and bassist Rudy Sarzo, were making big, big waves in England and Europe long before we noticed them here. Honestly, Blizzard of Oz really didn't take off in the United States until about a year later. I remember starting hearing your crazy train in May or June of that summer. Stylistically speaking, Rhodes does a nice update of Tony Iommi's Graveyard Crunch sound on tracks like I Don't Know, Crazy Train, and Mr. Crowley, and of course all the bedeviltry that Ozzy was known for in Sabbath finds its way over here, with some modern touches as well. Building upon the momentum that Ozzy and the boys were creating already, a new album was recorded post-haste, and this, for my money fans, was Ozzy's big high watermark. Released in late 1981, Diary of a Madman stands as Ozzy Osbourne's definitive work, for my honest money. This thing is flawless from start to finish. Randy Rhoads is absolutely on fire, as is the rest of the band, and every song here is absolutely fantastic. Capitalizing on the success, don't forget Flying High again got quite a bit of radio airplay. The band launched a tour, which basically featured a haunted house and Ozzy and his band grinding through most of Blizzard and a few tracks from Diary. Ozzy at this point was when he was also going absolutely berserk with some of his stunts. This is also the tour where he bit the head off the bat, something he still hasn't lived down to this day, not to mention the year before during a promotional meeting at CBS Jet Records, he bit the head off a dove. Ozzy was pretty much going absolutely berserk, fueled by his love with alcohol, but more on that later. The craziness from the tour continued into 1982 until in late March of that year, Randy Rhoads, hairdresser Rachel Youngblood, and a certain bus driver in the tour's K-Ball went on a small aircraft flight, and I have no idea what truly happened, but an accident occurred. The plane took a crash dive into some nearby houses, nearly hitting the Osbourne's touring bus, claiming the life of all three on board. Ozzy lost the partner of his life, as he has said many times before, and the world lost an immense talent. Rhoads' artistry in the genre of heavy metal, coupled with his love of classical music, made him a definitive artist. Very few have eclipsed what he has done. This includes Eddie Van Halen himself. But the true tragedy of all was 2 weeks later, Ozzy was slated to headline at Madison Square Garden, and it was going to be filmed, which eventually did happen, but more on that in a moment. And a live album was slated as well. There were conflicts between Ozzy and Randy at this point. Randy wanted to go to school and continue his classical studies, and it got quite ugly towards the end there. But Ozzy himself has never failed to hail Rhodes' contribution to his career, his genius, and his friendship. Ozzy, devastated, was about to throw it all in, but Sharon refused to let him. Several guitarists were hired for the remainder of the Diary of a Madman tour. Initially, the late, great Bernie Torme did it for about 2 weeks, but he just could not handle the vibe that was going on. And future Night Ranger guitarist Brad Gillis stepped in for the remaining dates on the tour, which included the Madison Square Garden show, which was filmed and released to MTV. Gillis also played on a double live album called Speak of the Devil, which essentially was a stopgap measure, as Ozzy didn't want to put out a live album with Rhodes so close to his passing, so he reworked a handful of Black Sabbath classics with Gillis, Sarzo, and Ulrich, and to be fair, it's pretty good. It's frantic, it's messy, it's sloppy, but it captures the old Sabbath vibe in a way that Black Sabbath at this point was having a hard time doing. After the release of Speak of the Devil, Ozzy took a break for a while, and his band dissolved. Rudy Sarzo returned to Quiet Riot, and they soon after had immense success with their Metal Health album, and Brad Gillis returned to Night Ranger, who began a string of hits of their own. One thing I have to say about Ozzy Osbourne, he has always had immensely good taste in guitarists. His next choice for his lead instrumentalist would be one Jake Williams, aka Jake E. Lee, whom he hired in the early part of 1983, and they began to tour all over Europe and England. They didn't hit the States until later in the year, with Ozzy in a bit of a lycanthropic state of mind. Bark at the Moon is where Ozzy really started to get some chart success, and by this point he was a household name due to his antics and whatnot, more so for that than his music. But as it stands, Bark at the Moon is an interesting piece of work. Jake E. Lee stands as a very good guitarist. He's not Rhodes, he's not Gillis, he's his own person, and he puts his own touches on Ozzy's tunes. Not everything on this album is all that great. There's some fantastic moments like the title track, Center of Eternity, Rock and Roll Rebel, and Closer Waiting for Darkness, but some of it is a bit too poppy and a bit too light, and Ozzy was kind of finding his feet again as it stands. But the album did well, and he took on tour with him of all the bands, Motley Crue, and the stories of that one are legendary, but that's besides the point. Ozzy was riding high, and he was doing a lot of festivals in the summer of 1984 as well. He and Jake would start working again very soon, but in 1985, Live Aid happened and the original Black Sabbath appeared, sparking rumors of a full-fledged reunion, but alas, relations between the members were quite strained, especially between Ozzy and Tony, and that never happened, and Ozzy quickly returned to his solo career. Released in early 1986, The Ultimate Sin proved to be another big hit for Ozzy, though he adopted a very much a glam rock look at this point, which really turned his fan base off in some respects, but he also had one of his biggest hits in Shot in the Dark. The album as it stands isn't bad and is an improvement upon Bark at the Moon. A lot of people don't like it. Some people like myself really enjoy some of it. I mean, some of it is really, really poppy, but some of it is actually very good. Songs like Secret Loser, the title track, Killer of Giants, and whatnot really give this album a good punch. Ozzy went on tour with Metallica, and he learned he was not invulnerable, as Metallica were the flavor of the day at that point, Master of Puppets having been released at the same time, and he really had to struggle to keep up with them. They were often stealing the show from him, and Ozzy learned the hard way that you really have to work your audience and give them what they want if you're going to maintain your career. As 1986 drew to a close and 1987 opened, Ozzy released, finally, the double live album with Randy Rhodes known as Tribute. Culled from some of the FM broadcasts that Ozzy did in the early 80s with Randy Rhodes, the album is good. I've actually heard bootlegs that are a lot better than this thing, but as it stands, it's a definitive statement of Rhodes' ability and was a considerable success all around. At the same time, Ozzy parted ways with guitarist Jake E. Lee and pretty much took the rest of 1987 off after that point. 1988 saw the introduction of Ozzy's new guitarist and one of his most beloved sidemen, Zakk Wylde. Zakk Wylde was a disciple of Tony Iommi's, but also of Lynyrd Skynyrd, so you could hear a lot of chicken picking in his playing. As it stood, Ozzy was trying to gain ground again, coming against bands like Metallica, Megadeth, Anthrax, and Slayer, and adopting a much heavier image and heavier sound with his 1988 release, No Rest for the Wicked. As it stands, the album is pretty good, but often neglected. This thing is heavy. Zakk shows off his Iommi love in a lot of the songs like Devil and Daughter, Crazy Babies, Demon Alcohol, Bloodbath, and Paradise. But also you hear, as I said, some of that country going on with the chicken picking. He's an interesting character, and he has made quite the name for himself over the years with Ozzy and on his own with Black Label Society. But suffice it to say, No Rest did well, but not as well as his prior records. But the tour was a shimmering success as Ozzy reunited with legendary Black Sabbath bassist Geezer Butler for the majority of the dates, and they actually played in Russia for the first time. On the heels of that, in 1990 came a small EP called Just Say Ozzy, which featured several cuts from No Rest for the Wicked, a couple of Black Sabbath numbers, but most importantly, a much superior version of Shot in the Dark done live with Zakk adopting Jake Ely's patterns in a much more aggressive fashion, and it comes off better than the recorded version. Go check it out for yourself. Ozzy began to realize his career was going to have to diversify if he was going to maintain his audience, and in 1991, his last truly great album was released. Released in the second half of 1991, No More Tears was a runaway for success for Osbourne, featuring tracks like Hellraiser, Desire, the title tune, and big hits in Mama, I'm Coming Home, Time After Time, and The Road to Nowhere. Different, diversified, heavy, but at the same time melodic, it really brought Osbourne to a pinnacle he never really recaptured after this. During the course of the following tour, Ozzy was misdiagnosed as having multiple sclerosis, and he decided to pack it in at this point, labeling the rest of the tour No More Tours being a farewell package. At the last two dates of it, November 14th and 15th of 1992, Ozzy invited the original members of Black Sabbath to come up and do some songs with him on the final date, which prompted rumors of a reunion, which actually came very close to coming true, but alas, contracts were never signed, and Ozzy just decided at the last minute he didn't want to do it. And he pretty much went underground for the next few years. He didn't resurface again until 1995 with the release of an album called Osmosis, which featured once again Zakk Wylde on guitar, Geezer Butler on bass, and Mike Borden on drums. The album is kind of a disjointed mess, but Geezer Butler's presence in the songwriting department helps a lot with heavier things like Thunder Underground, the aforementioned Perry Mason, and My Jekyll Doesn't Hide. Ozzy toured and toured and toured again behind this one, and this is also at the point where he launched Ozfest in 1996, which has some big implications, as in the following year, 1997, Ozzy launched another one, which included a Black Sabbath reunion sans Bill Ward, and this is where Sabbath's career pretty much intertwined with Ozzy's for the next few years, as reunion tours, a reunion album simply called Reunion, and several years of touring behind that occurred for the next few years. Ozzy, Tony, Geezer, and Bill were back in a big way, signaling a return of some of the big giants of heavy metal, including Judas Priest and Iron Maiden, in the next few years. Ozzy didn't resume his solo career again until the tail end of 2001. I found it very interesting, though, when Sabbath finished their reunion tour in 1999, Ozzy really didn't do much until 2001, when once again he launched another Ozfest, and surprise, surprise, Sabbath headlined it, including in their set a new song called Scary Dreams, which never really saw the light of day. Ozzy's next solo effort, Down to Earth, was released at the tail end of 2001, and though it was a modest hit for him, it was again a disjointed kind of record, going between rockers, ballads, and mid-tempo pondering things. But he had a couple of hits on it, including Gets Me Through and an interesting introspective ballad called Dreamer. He toured behind this one as well, and shortly thereafter, the Osbournes became reality on cable TV. Now, I'm not a big fan of this thing. I really thought it was played for laughs, and I think it was exaggerated, and it turned out later they faked a lot of what went on it. But from 2002 to 2004, it was a big hit, and I must give kudos that they did not shy away from Sharon Osbourne's colon cancer battle either. The next few years on Ozfest, Black Sabbath headlined the bill in 2004 and 2005, and in 2006, they were inducted, or should I say indicted, into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and that was pretty much it for a few years for Black Sabbath. Ozzy released a new album in 2007 called Black Rain, which really didn't do much of anything. It has a very dark presence, and the fans didn't seem to like it. I always was very fond of the song I Don't Want to Stop, but the rest of it left me cold. Sabbath went on to form Heaven and Hell with a reunion with Ronnie James Dio and Vinnie Appice, and Ozzy continued on his solo career. At this point, he had a parting of the ways with Zakk Wylde and brought in Firewind guitarist Gus G. In 2010, they released the album Scream, an atypical Ozzy Osbourne record, but like I said, Ozzy's days of making big hits had kind of come to an end, and also that year we lost Ronnie James Dio on May 16th due to stomach cancer, so the writing was on the wall as it was. On November 11th of 2011, Sabbath announced yet another reunion with all four original members, but Bill Ward left the ranks very quickly to be replaced by Brad Welk in the studio and Tommy Clafidis on tour for the next few years. Tony Iommi's lymphoma being announced in 2012 put a crimp on quite a bit of the touring plans they had. The studio recording continued, but Ozzy had dates to fulfill live, so he launched a tour called Ozzy and Friends, which included, among others, bassist Geezer Butler, guitarist Zakk Wylde, Gus G., and Slash on many dates, playing Sabbath classics together in the absence of one Mr. Iommi. I found it always interesting on this tour, and you can check it out on YouTube as well, that when you put together Zakk Wylde, Gus G., and Slash on things like NIB, Iron Man, War Pigs, and Paranoid, the three guitarists still can't match the volcanic sound of Mr. Iommi. A word to the wise, you can't mess with the original. Sabbath played their last couple of dates in Birmingham, England in early February of 2017, leaving Ozzy to tour on his own yet again, claiming at the end of the tour that he didn't have as much fun as apparently Tony Iommi told him to tone down his onstage antics. Believe what you will, I'm not really sure what to make of that. Ozzy returned to television with his son Jack for Ozzy and Jack's Road Trip, which has run for 3, possibly 4 seasons. I haven't caught up with a lot of it, which is an interesting little piece of humor, and Ozzy and Jack just jumping into an old jalopy or an old Winnebago and traveling around the country seeing what they can see. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it was always amusing to watch, and it was much more straightforward than the Osbournes ever were. Ozzy, of course, continued to tour, play Ozfests and the like, all the while preparing another record, which ended up being released just last month. Titled Ordinary Man, it's a hodgepodge of material, but it's the sharpest Ozzy has been in a long, long time. It's a mixed bag, featuring a ton of guest stars and some interesting choices in musicians, including Elton John and a duet. But suffice it to say, Ozzy the Prior had a really tough year with lots of medical problems, taking a spill, and obviously his Parkinson's diagnosis. Continuous cancellations of world tours, not to mention the fact he is in his 70s at this point, have led many to question whether Ozzy's touring days are over, let alone his recording career. My honest opinion, I think he's going to keep recording until he dies, and he will definitely give his all to try and get back on stage. But at this stage in the game, and especially at his advanced years, it would be a wise idea if maybe he toned it down a little, but we shall see. Ozzy's always been stubborn, he loves what he does, and he will always be part of a fixture in rock and roll and heavy metal for the future to come. What happens next is anybody's guess. No one lives forever. Time will tell, but we always wish the man the best. And who knows, he may surprise us all. He's done it more than once. Comments, critiques, suggestions, drop me a line at erveister@wooh.rr.com. Look me up on Facebook. My name is Eric Veister. I'm likely to respond to both, but you're going to get a better chance of catching me on Facebook. When you have the chance, take a look over at my Blogspot page, the Veister's Halloween Haunt Journal, full of news and reviews that you can use and abuse. Next time on the Vista, well, that's up in the air at press time, but it'll be something cool and something interesting. It's just what it is, I really can't tell you at this point. So until next time, always remember, Svengoolie's cradle, and brush your fangs, comb your face, drink your milk before it clots, bite mama goodnight, and always remember, I hid the bat's body because Ozzy slipped me a 20 to do so. Everyone take care, be safe, and we'll see everybody again in 2 weeks' time.
Ready to dress up your show? Need to pump new life into old props? Just want to show something no one else has? Do what Alice Cooper, Distortions Unlimited, and A-list haunters all over the world do. Wear Von Karam. Durable, handcrafted, dependable year after year. Von Karam. When you scare enough to wear the very best. VonKaron.com. V-O-N. CHARON.com.
Doyle, Abominator, on the Big Scary Show.
ride back into the swamp where we hid the body, we would like to thank the following sponsors. Screamline Studios, Dark Imaginings, Von Caron Productions, Haunt Pay, Ticket Leap, and Creepy Collection. We would also like to thank Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse, as well as the Fortga hosts, including Storm, Rants and More, HauntMinute.com, The Unknown Scare Actor, Actor Trainer and Traveling Actor Troupe. For more information, check out MaulMonsters.com. That's MaulMonsters.com. Drew Badger, Actor Trainer and Consultant. Find out more at RabidBadger.org. And Jerry Vane, the Hauntstrumentalist. For all your heavy metal and haunt needs, JerryVane.com. And finally, you, the listener. Without you, we are nothing.
The Big Scary Show is copyright Big Scary Show, LLC, and no rebroadcast of this show may be made without express permission of the owners. All music used on The Big Scary Show is used with expressed permission of the artists themselves.